Nice words, but they don't get me shit.
Right on! Okay, you people, face up. Your belongings are to be returned to you, without your weapons, of course, and the Gen will give you the lowdown on our outfit and why you're needed. Especially you, old man.
You need all that firepower just to talk to us and tell us that?
Lady, you may be a mutie, but even you should have worked that one out. I'll bet Mr. Dix here has it sussed.
If you mean what I figure, maybe it means that you respect us too much to take chances.
Damn, but you're a sensible man. It's a pity you're not one of us. I could really work with someone like you. Okay, in 5 minutes you'll be ready to move out.
With that, Murphy stepped back and nodded to his right. Two orderlies with the slack jaws of inbreeding shuffled forward, carrying piles of clothing, which they flung into the room.
Hurry up, y'all! Just 5 minutes.
They were ready in three. All were glad to get into their familiar clothes, rather than the standard-issue army underwear they'd found when they had first awakened. Doc greeted his frock coat like an old friend.
My kingdom for my walking stick.
Not expect everything, Doc.
Jack hunted through his patchwork jacket for any of the leaf-bladed knives that might have been overlooked. The Sec-Man had been as thorough as could have been expected, once bitten. Now they had their wrist crons back, Ryan noted that it was almost 5 minutes to the second when the door burst open and Wallace walked into the room. He entered without taking any precautions, and with the air of a man who was used to his every word being obeyed. In his own kingdom, he had no need to be careful. Behind him, Murphy and a troop of four Sec-Men kept the Gen covered.
Listen up, people. We need your man, Dr. Theophilus Tanner, to assist us in our work, which must continue for the day when the Reds will rise again. Make no mistake, those Rusky Reds are cunning bastards, and may just be lying low. In return for the doctor's help, you'll be allowed to stay here, and stay alive. There's always a need to recycle, and you'll all be useful, sooner or later.
There was something about the way he said it that made Mildred shiver. Back in the pre-Skydark days, when she was involved in cryogenics, many of the medics and technicians she had worked with had used such terms, and in a similar tone of voice.
In the meantime, I want you to see the facilities we have here, just so you people know what you're up against. Now follow me.
Wallace spun on his heel and waddled out of the room. As he passed Murphy, the Sec Chief gestured with the H and K he was grasping. Sizing up the other four soldiers, J.B. saw that two of them clutched H&Ks, and two were holding Uzis. All five blasters were trained unwaveringly on their captives. There was a boastful and proud quality to Wallace's voice that fired hope in Ryan's heart. He was so keen to show them how strong he was that he might unwittingly reveal a weakness.
Pompous bastards.
A quick glance at J.B. and an almost imperceptible nod of the armorer's head showed that he'd had similar thoughts. Ryan led the way out between the Sec-Men, who were well spaced by Murphy, in order to ensure that any attack couldn't be focused on more than one armed man. The group fell into their normal wreck pattern, with J.B. staying back while Jack took the middle, Christy and Dean in front of him, Mildred and Doc behind. In front, Wallace had already embarked on a long-winded lecture about the history of the redoubt, and how it had served as a research and development unit, while still fulfilling its main purpose as part of the totality concept. Ryan listened with interest to this part of the lecture. Over the years, he had picked up shreds of information here and there about the totality concept, and also about the various weapons and operations that had been part of it. He was also interested in the way that Doc fit the pattern, his interest having been piqued by the information they had discovered at Crater Lake. In many ways, this community reminded him of Crater Lake, the old scientific complex under an extinct volcano that had housed a community of inbred, mutated whitecoats. Except these people were insane in a more dangerous way, and still had a strong military discipline that would make them difficult to best. As Wallace led them through the redoubt, both Ryan and J.B. tried to keep a mental note of where the corridors led. It looked to be laid out in a similar way to most of the redoubts they had visited, but there were extra sections and more levels. They went down 5 levels, enduring the hostile gaze of the redoubt inhabitants, going about their daily business as they passed. All the while, Wallace kept up his litany of praise for the work his ancestors had started, and that his people were continuing.
And this is where we softened you up for interrogation. There are 8 ops rooms in all, each one equipped similarly, which was quite convenient when you think of it, as there are 7 of you. As you know only too well, the techniques developed here are far ahead of anything you outsider scum may have.
He stopped them as he reached this point in the lecture. They were in the OBS room where Dr. Trix was collecting data spilling from a chattering printer. She looked around at them and raised an elegant eyebrow. Christie looked her up and down with a perusing eye. She wouldn't have expected to see such physical perfection in an environment where even the muscle-bound Sekhmen and their seemingly healthy chief showed some signs of mutation or inbreeding. Was she a mutie in some way that Christie didn't understand?
There is one thing. For so-called outsider scum, they've proved rather adept at traveling. I'd love to know how they've learned to use the Mat-Trans, especially as our people have never quite worked it out.
You know why. They have Dr. Tanner, and you know what is to be done with him.
Christie felt a shiver run down her spine, and her hair snapped tight to her head, coiling protectively around her. She suddenly felt very afraid for Doc, and wondered at what cost he had bought their temporary reprieve. Wallace led them through the redoubt. They moved down another level to the R&D labs, where the advanced armory was maintained. Here he showed them the remote-control Trank tank that had taken them out in the corridor, and other mobile and remote-controlled weapons. JB was interested despite himself at Grenfirers and large-caliber blasters mounted on tracks. They were flamethrowers and laser weapons that looked as though they might, at one time, have been deadly, but were now just highly polished junk. Ryan and Jack exchanged a look. It was easy to see how the weapons had been allowed to descend to this degree of tidy disrepair by taking one look at the maintenance techs, many of whom were slack-jawed and drooling, or showing signs of too much inbreeding. The mutie genes were less obvious among these personnel, certainly nothing like the chilled maintenance man with the sticky heritage, but there was a large degree of insularity that had led to a mechanical repetition of tasks, rather than understanding what they really meant. Ryan found that interesting. If they were used to a mechanical routine, then anything that threw them off might cause confusion, rather than spur them into the same military and drilled action that he knew the Sekhmen would be capable of. That was a good sign. On the 8th level, they passed a laboratory that was sealed off by double-glazed and reinforced fire doors, with a comp-coded sec-lock similar to those used on the electronic sec-doors in the corridors. Strangely, Wallace became reticent when they reached this point. All of a sudden, he clammed up on them.
This level is where the mechanism is maintained. It was the great work for which we were trained and for which we all live. This is the work in which Dr. Tanner can help us.
Aren't you going to tell us what this is?
Wallace shot a venomous glance at him, and Murphy stepped forward to prod him in the ribs with the Agent K.
Shut up, you old fuck! You'll find out soon enough.
Strange that you're so quiet now, though, isn't it, Jen Wallace?
There are things about the mechanism that must be kept secret for now. We'll move on.
It didn't escape anyone's notice that the garrulous fat man had something nasty to hide. Where Wallace led them next put all such thoughts out of their minds. They went up several levels, then through a maze of corridors.
And this, people, is the armory.
Damn.
Boxes upon boxes of rifles, Grens, ammunition, Gren launchers and mortars were carefully stacked around the base of the armory walls. Hanging on racks were the in-service weapons, Uzi, MP5K, M60 machine guns, Grens primed and ready for use, boxes of ammo for the greased and gleaming blasters, and a variety of smaller hand blasters. It was rare for an armory to still contain such an array of blasters and Grens, let alone in such perfect working order and condition. The armory was a credit to Murphy and his forefathers. Jack tried to move forward to get a closer look inside the armory, but he was nudged back into place by the barrel of an Uzi. He glared at the sick man with his good eye, hatred flashing across his scarred features.
Watch it, Mutie.
That's enough.
Sir, my apologies.
Very good. Mr. Dix, I understand from Sarge Murphy's report that you are the weapons expert in this little band.
Maybe.
Come now, there's no need for modesty. I heard you whistle. A good man with a gun is always needed. You notice my use of the term gun? I find it less crude than blaster, the scum outsider term for weaponry. Too basic. Too all-encompassing.
J.B. caught a glimpse of Jack out of the corner of his eye. The albino had an expression on his face that spelled out his opinion of Wallace. It wasn't good. Ryan, on the other hand, was seriously considering the possibility that Wallace was so far gone into insanity as to just wipe them out where they stood.
Okay, Sarge, take them back to the dorm and contain them. I'll consult the techs on the mechanism and inform you when I require Tanner.
Wallace looked at them with a detached disdain that bordered on contempt. Then, without another word, he spun on his heel and left them standing in front of the armory. Ryan watched the man waddle around the corner of the corridor, then turned his head to Murphy. The sec chief also was watching Wallace with a look of bemusement. He caught Ryan watching him and immediately blanked his face, but not quickly enough for Ryan not to wonder about his loyalty to Wallace.
Right, people, move out like the gen said.
They turned and allowed themselves to be marched back to the dormitory. All kept their eyes wide for any sign of slack on the part of the sec men, any opportunity, no matter how slight, that might enable them to mount an escape. There wasn't even the whisper of a chance. Murphy's men marched them efficiently back to the dormitory and locked them in.
How can that guy Wallace be so stupid? He's shown us the layout of the entire redoubt and where the armory is.
It doesn't really appear to make sense, Dean. It's hardly great sec.
It doesn't, but then why should it, Christy? Wallace is crazy. This whole redoubt is riddled with stupidity. You know that, even if you don't know why.
You're right there. I've got a really bad feeling about the whole situation.
So, better do something.
Mildred moved over to the door and looked up at the sec camera that surveyed the room.
Yeah, but what?
You, soldier, get that damn door open!
The soldier on guard outside the dorm snapped to attention as he heard Murphy storming toward him.
Sir?
Don't you ever pay attention when you're at your post, soldier! What does the good book say? Vigilance is the sacred duty of the Sons of Sam! If the old fart is dying, then the gen will have both of us on a fucking charge, and I'm not patrolling the Rad Blast Wastes for a month just because you're a fuckwit.
Sir, but what is it, sir?
Murphy was carrying a Heckler & Koch, which he cranked up level with the door.
Monitor, son. The old bastard is writhing on his bed, and the medic isn't getting far. Might have a better idea if the friggin' sound worked properly, but all I can make out is friggin' static. If the old fart dies, I'm dead meat, and without anyone to succeed me yet. Open the bastard door, boy!
Sir.
Leveling his Uzi, safety off, the guard punched the lock code into the door and turned the handle. He flung the door in and adopted a combat stance, rapidly counting the figures standing in front of him. 6. And the old man was lying on one of the beds, clutching his guts.
Oh.
Damn, the guard thought. Why hadn't he heard anything? He didn't want Murphy on his back. Seeing that all of the captives were in plain sight, Murphy rushed into the room, sweeping his blaster in an arc to cover them.
Okay. What's going on here? What's the matter with Tanner?
Appendix, I think. Unless you have the right medical facilities and allow me to operate immediately, then he'll probably die.
The hell you'll operate? We've got our own medics. Think we'll trust some outsider?
Okay, you get one of your inbred muties to do it and kill Doc off. Doesn't bother me.
Let me take a look at him.
The sec chief's indecision infected the guard standing in the doorway. twitching slightly and training his blaster on the largest grouping of prisoners, the trio of Christie, J.B., and Dean, who stood to the left of the bed. The guard ignored Jack. An upbringing in the swamps, hunting nervous and sensitive wildlife, had given Jack the ability to move without seeming to do so. Murphy's attention was locked on the bed, where Ryan and Mildred stood over Doc. The guard had his attention focused on the trio clustered to the left-hand side of the room. The forgotten, silent albino teen glided around the room until he was just behind the guard, in the man's blind spot. Ironically, it was the sudden awareness of something being out of place that made him look around. Too late. The plates from their last meal were still piled on a plastic tray, with the plastic cutlery heaped beside them. Remnants of the inedible meal still dirtied the surface of the plates. Pieces of stringy meat from an indeterminate animal, covered in a tasteless goo that passed for a sauce, were hard and stuck fast on the surface of the plate that Jack picked from the tray and in one fluid motion flicked toward the guard. The albino was small and wiry, but years of practice with his knives had given him an incredible strength and dexterity in his wrists. He also had an unerring eye for distance, even with his vision reduced by his injuries. Instinctively, he waved the plate in his hand and directed it with the required amount of force. Tilted to a 45-degree angle and propelled at great speed, the thin plate had no problem in crushing the guard's septum as it hit him on the bridge of his nose. The plate's upward trajectory drove the septum up and into the frontal lobes of the guard's brain. Consciousness ceased almost immediately. His motor functions were a little behind, and as the guard went down, his trigger finger twitched. A spray of shells left the Uzi, scattering in an erratic arc as his dead arm was jerked around by the recoil of the blaster.
What the fuck?
Blind instinct told Murphy to hit the deck as the spray of fire flew across the room. As he went down, he cracked his head on an iron bedstead. Perhaps he would have considered it unlucky to have hit the very spot that Ryan's weighted scarf had injured earlier, but he should have considered it good luck. If he hadn't been rendered unconscious, he would most certainly have been chilled. Leaving him alive in an attempt to save time was something that Ryan thought he might later regret, but at that moment, the one-eyed warrior was concerned only with getting his people armed and out.
Good throw, Jack!
J.B. retrieved the Heckler and Koch, checking the downed sec chief for spare ammo.
Teach you sometime, kid.
Jack tossed the Uzi to Ryan with one hand while searching the dead guard for additional ammunition and weapons. Doc stuck his head over the edge of the bed. When the shooting began, he had immediately ceased his agonized groaning and thrown himself over the side of the bed, taking cover beneath.